So lecture eight, it's Thursday, February 10th. Lecture notes, page, if I got it right today, is page 77, and I believe I am recording the slides. Thanks for being here. Yes, I did. So we're essentially settled around 6:14. I'm sure we'll lose some as time goes on. Masks, 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 masks. I can't see that far, but I think everybody's got a mask on. If you're interested in a position in sales or marketing as an internship or as a potential job, or you know anybody who's looking for a job, we have both virtual and in-person events coming up for sales and marketing internships and entry-level jobs. You can register from that link. Of course, this will be in the housekeeping slides, as it always is. In person, Tuesday, February 22nd, and virtual Thursday, the 24th. If that's for you, do it. Also, in other domains, Northeast Ohio Regional Career Exploration Fair, February 16th, the Summer Abroad Bash. Who's already been abroad, studied abroad already? Who's interested in studying abroad? Okay, well, good. So that might be something you want to know about. And if you're an accountant type, there's a meet and greet for the Summer Leadership Development. Again, these slides will be up in the housekeeping slides, or contact me for more information. I'll see what I can find out. Any vets here? Veterans? Not for you then. All right, so Veteran Services thing. Extra credit number one closes tonight at 11:59 p.m. Who's taken it? Who's already done one version or another? Who's tried but can't get through? I've had some. Okay, nobody in here. And then Mini Test 4 opens tomorrow on our regular schedule. Opens tomorrow, closes Tuesday. We know that. We know, did we see? I don't think we saw the results last time because they weren't up yet. So average 89%. Number of students taking it, although the number of students changes in total, the percentage seems to stick at 97. I'd like to see, you know, like 99, 100% taking it. It is for a grade. Okay, so marketing in the news. I forget if I asked this question, it'd be funny. How many people love Walmart? How many people hate Walmart? How many people love to hate Walmart, if you know what I mean? I hate it, but I'm shopping there anyhow because they got really good deals. Walmart shows how it connects with people with its Live Better Now campaign. Can a company help you live a better life? That is the question posed in Walmart's latest campaign, Live Better Now. So there's a campaign theme. A 60-second commercial debuted during the Winter Olympics opening ceremony on February 4th. It'll run across linear and digital media during the 2022 Olympics and Paralympics, then throughout 2022. So there's a bit about their plan for their media schedule, their planning. According to a spokesperson, the ad focuses on telling the story behind the company's broader purpose. I think that's a mini test question. So what's its focus? It's on telling the broader story behind the broader purpose. It showcases products like produce, dog food, diapers, and toys, as well as services like vaccinations, curbside pickup, and even drone delivery. So we're building awareness of our broader purpose and these particular products and services. We see your hopes and fears, your dreams, your doubts, the voice over says in the spot. That's why we show up day after day to get what you need when you need it. So it's providing consumer value. Let's see the ad and see if it resonates with you or not.
Can a company help you live a better life?
Home again, home again.
We're not talking about just any company.
One day I know I feel home again.
We're talking about the one in your neighborhood.
Home again, home.
And in 4,700 others, just like yours. With almost 2 million people helping you live a little better every day. We see your hopes and fears, your dreams and doubts. It's why we show up day after day to get you what you need when you need it. To keep you healthy and safe. To help you put a better meal on the table. So, can a company help you live a better life? We're working on it every day.
So notice, nowhere are we talking about everyday low prices. That's not our theme. We're talking about other things that we can do to provide value for you. We care about you. Our employees care about you. I've yet to see anybody deliver a product by dropping down of a drone yet, but okay. So that's what it's all about. At Walmart, we understand how the human connection ignites the potential for a better life. This campaign reveals the stories behind our associates and our customers that we think will surprise, inspire, and move people to understand that human connection. So a little emotional appeal. A lot of what I show you I like is funny, humor, That's not what this is. This is like an emotional connection, right? So understanding consumer motivations, which is what we're talking about in the lectures, and how do we provide them with value given what they want. Walmart recently partnered with NBC's Today Show for more shoppable content. It also recently unveiled what it pegs as a new interactive shopping experience called the Time Well Spent, using QR codes and digital screens, which it hopes will better engage customers. Much later on, at the end of the course, we'll talk about this new way of getting to the customer at every touch point, through every channel, every way we can. Omnichannel marketing is one of the new terms out there. Three questions to ask about your audience before launching a digital subscription program. This is pretty specific. If you are a digital producer of online material, but I like the three questions you have to ask, which I think are broader, and so this came out in my feed. If you're a digital publisher thinking about implementing digital subscriptions, it's easy to be overwhelmed by the factors and variables that go into launching, evolving, and scaling this new subscription model. To help your business thrive, you'll need a strategy in place to help you meet your goals. I've bolded those since that was the earlier discussion of the course, right? Strategies, goals, and a plan to optimize your results over time. So here's the importance of planning. Take it one step at a time by understanding your organization's audience. Submit, if you will, understanding your consumer's behavior, right? That's what we're talking about in class, to inform your product strategy. Asking these three questions will help you start off on the right foot and determine the best path forward. So the importance of understanding the consumer and their behavior. Who is my audience? Well, yes, who is it you're trying to bring value to with your subscription? Your most engaged, loyal readers are most likely to become subscriber members or customers of your new product. If you don't feel confident in your understanding of this group, an audience survey can help you collect demographics and test preferences, behaviors, or interests across various populations, or we would use the term segments out there. Audience surveys are best used to gather quickly lots of information from a broad audience, like when you have a specific question and hypothesis to test. Later on, we talk about marketing research to understand your consumer and their behavior, right? For example, you might find a loyal group of readers who visit your website every morning after reading your daily newsletter. Or another segment might visit your website every Sunday morning to read about the local football team's upcoming match. And another segment still is visiting a few times a week over the lunch hour to read breaking news stories they see on social media. So what are those different segments? What are the needs, wants, and desires that cluster them together that make them different from the other ones? How would you provide value to them? You have to know what it is before you can provide value. So every audience segment, they call them persona, has its own specific needs. So it's vital to zero in on what motivates all of them to subscribe in order to be successful with a paid launch. So understanding your consumer's motivation is key. We just said that last time. Here it is in the news. Two, what would they pay? Your audience's values, needs, and relationship to your brand will help you define the product or set of products that best serve them and meet their needs. For example, you might consider offering corresponding products such as, for daily visitors, a metered paywall, a method of segmentation based on page views, which will make the most sense for very high output operations with unquestioned brand loyalty. People willing to come to you and pay by subscription. For those interested just in sports, if you find a segment of readers visiting your website solely, say for example, local sports, as many local publications have, offering a separate subscription product for only your sports section can be a smart way to increase your revenue from this segment. For occasional readers, you could have a freemium model better fit to encourage conversations. So part of what you give away is for free, but then when you want the good stuff, you got to click on that and subscribe, pay for that part of it. Under the freemium model, you will often have articles that vastly outperform any others, with individual articles driving thousands of conversations. In some cases, those runaway successes also help editorial to understand what kinds of articles to produce more of. So it was successful, what else can we do? No matter your offering, conducting in-depth audience interviews with small samples of users allows you to get feedback on features, prototypes, or concepts, and can even help you discover new ideas, which we'll talk about when we talk about new product idea development. This type of qualitative feedback is indispensable to validate your ideas and to get an early stage proof of concept before moving forward with your launch. So again, the importance of marketing research to understanding the consumer. I don't know if I mentioned you guys, this coming weekend, there's a big football game on called the Super Bowl. Have we talked about that at all? Can't get away from it. I'm sorry. I've tried to not make everything. I got ahead of myself. Sorry. Third question. I was doing a segue there a little early. Sorry. What's the right price? While needlessly low prices can leave money on the table, pricing too high can kill demand for a new offering before it has a chance to gain traction. As though it's taken from our lecture on pricing coming up later in the semester, it's true. So here's the importance of price in the marketing mix. The right price depends on your strategy. Do you want to maximize the number of subscribers, revenue, brand perception, or some other metric? A well-designed pricing survey can help identify user price sensitivity and willingness to pay. So remember, it's an integrated marketing mix. It all has to work together, and price has to fit in with everything else you're offering. It's also important to watch out for price cliffs. Every product has a psychological price threshold, and they tend to occur at round numbers, like $5 or $10 for monthly, or $50, $75, or $100 for annual. Cross over that cliff, people say, well, I'm not paying that much. Above these numbers, demand drops off, so pricing just below them helps your conversion rate. So price is part of the mix. Test and test again. Launching a subscription program can be the start of a new journey, but the first iteration on your product shouldn't be the last. Organizations are constantly fine-tuning their offerings, and those that do have significantly better results than those who have static offerings and marketing strategies, because consumer needs, wants, and desires change over time. You have to track them and stay with them. So evaluate and revise as needed. Now over to our Super Bowl spot. How many people know Zendaya? Zendaya. You say Zendaya. I say it as Zendaya. It makes me look old if I say it wrong, though, so I like to do that. Zendaya seashell sales skyrocket in Squarespace. How many people know Squarespace? Not that many. Smoothly spoken Super Bowl spot. While an effective tongue twister selling seashells by the seashore has never been a particularly lucrative business prospect, but in this Super Bowl spot, Zendaya provides that, proves that with the right entrepreneurial spirit and a shining Squarespace storefront, business can boom. So celebrity and advertising, entrepreneurship. As a creator myself and a Squarespace customer since 2018, I understand the importance of having an online presence that truly represents you and your business. So she's making her Super Bowl debut this year. So the importance of authenticity. She uses it. She's a customer. She believes in it. And here's our, actually, I took this off of the news. So this talks about it from the news prospect. But we'll keep it short.
That campy classic from Coke, shot on a hilltop in Italy, aired during the Super Bowl in 1972. Now get this, back then a 30-second ad reportedly cost $500,000. That is adjusted for inflation. That's in today's dollars. A half century later, it is a lot more. A spot in this year's big game is going for as much as $7 million. And some companies are going all out. This morning, we're getting an exclusive first look at a new Super Bowl ad featuring Zendaya for Squarespace. Take a look.
Sally sold seashells by the seashore. But the seashells didn't sell so well. So Sally set up a seashell store on Squarespace. Soon, her seashells started selling. Sally was such a seaside sensation, she also sold swanky seashell accessories, seashell serenity sessions, savory seaside snacks, even seashell excursions of the seashore. Sally's seashells were so successful, she sailed into the setting sun as a seashell celebrity.
Shucks.
So that is the Super Bowl ad that should get a little bit of attention. It's sort of lighthearted. How many of you guys have heard that Coca-Cola, I'd like to buy the world of Coke? How many people have heard that ever? I wasn't sure. My wife said, do you know how young I was when that came out in 1972? It's a good one. So note the unadjusted cost of a 30-second Super Bowl ad in 1972. They gave you the adjusted price, was $86,100. And in those days, that was a lot of money. How much? Of course, we're saying that now, right? For $7 million. How much? But the that's when he says it's adjusted at $500,000 in today's dollars. So it was $86,100 in 72. The ad champions, modern-day commerce, and the creative possibilities that online storefronts allow merchants to harness. So we're seeing a bit about e-commerce and marketing, which is, of course, a channel of distribution. Our belief is that the new internet economy will be fueled by the imagination of a new breed of creators and entrepreneurs, constantly exploring and experimenting with all the possibilities behind their idea. According to Anthony Casalina, founder of CEO Squarespace, the brand hopes the imaginative spot will stress that the platform supports anyone, from established business owners to new entrepreneurs who are just starting out with an idea. So we're building awareness, we're talking about the attributes of the service and the positioning of the brand. So we'll have to see what the Super Bowl ads overall look like for next week. All right, so we're going to pick up with lecture notes, page 67 and page 129 in the textbook, continuing chapter 5, Understanding Consumer Behavior. And I hope, which you know, I guess you believe, but these marketing in the news stories emphasize the importance of understanding that consumer on a real-life basis. So we had been talking, as you recall, about this, the stages in the decision-making process, and we pointed out that, first of all, you don't act without having some problem in mind. It might be just a little spontaneous thing. Oh, I'd like a snack. I want something fun. It could be buying a car, a house, a microwave oven. And we talked about the fact that you search for information, you evaluate the information that you come up with using criteria that form beliefs and attitudes about the brands, you end up buying value, and then we have the outcome of the purchase. And we said that from our perspective, you have some level of satisfaction. So you can be dissatisfied, which is, quote, a level of satisfaction, satisfied, delighted, right? Levels of satisfaction. But you also have dissonance with your purchase. So consumers make purchase choice based on their evaluations of the brands, on their purchase decisions. They evaluate whether their choice fulfilled their needs, wants, and desires. So this is consumer satisfaction, yeah? Did my purchase satisfy the needs, wants, and desires that I started when I started for the problem? So here's a little story. It's my storytelling chair. Here's a little story. There was a company in Michigan, based in Michigan, that made blueberry muffins. Anybody like blueberry muffins? So it was a blueberry muffin mix. You actually did it at home. And they were doing some research, and they decided that people would really respond to fresh-picked Michigan blueberries. So they create a new mix. They have people mix it up. It's as easy to make as the old kind. They have them taste them in blind taste tests. You know what that is. You don't know which brand you're tasting, what you're tasting. People make them up. People taste them blind. They don't know if it's the old mix or the new mix. People love the new mix. They create an advertising campaign that shows the fresh-picked Michigan blueberries and making it up and the delicious response that people had. Oh, my goodness. And they go out and they sell the product. And guess what? It sold pretty good. And then it didn't. So now they're head scratching. Wait a minute. We have a blueberry muffin mix. It has fresh picked blueberries. It has an ad that shows how delicious it is. People were buying it and they didn't go back. They weren't satisfied. Why? I know you don't know. Why might they not have been satisfied? Why might they not be? Give me any reason at all. Yo. Say again, they what?
It didn't live up to the hype.
Oh, my goodness. I think in 115 years of me telling that story, you're the first one that actually got it right. Have you been here before? All right, thank you. Exactly so. What they said was, it was good. But it wasn't as good as you made it look in the ad. You set the expectations so high with this delicious advertisement that when I actually tasted it, never mind that in blind taste tests it tastes better than the old one, it didn't live up to the hype. It didn't match what you set my expectations to be. So consumer satisfaction is a function of the consumer's expectations, often set by who? You, the marketer, and their perception of the product performance. And notice I'm saying their perception because in a blind taste test, objectively, it tasted better than the previous version. But the perception against the expectations you set meant they were dissatisfied. Wow, that's crazy. So when perceived product performance or service performance is below your expectations, then consumers, of course, are dissatisfied. If your perceived performance equals your expectations, consumers are satisfied. And if you can run into this rare situation where your customer's perceived performance of your product or service is greater than they expected, then they're delighted. And so here I popped up the J.D. Powers Award for customer satisfaction. All of these states then go on to influence the consumer in different ways. So marketers should promise only what they can deliver. And in fact, some marketers slightly understate what they will deliver to make you delighted when you get even better. The reverse of this would be, have you ever taken your car in to get it repaired? And they give you an estimate, the estimate. And they come in under the estimate. Whoa, thank you. How do you feel if they ever come in over the estimate or say they have to go over? So they might pad it a little bit. Of course, there might be an unexpected problem. They pad it, and they can't pad it too much. But they may be padding a little bit, so you're delighted when you come back in, and they brought it in under the estimate. Wow, I felt good. They treated me right. So when consumers are satisfied, this influences what they will do next time, yes? If they're satisfied, what are they likely to do? Decide that they made a good decision, their evaluative processes were right, they chose a good brand, try it again. If they're dissatisfied, unless they're not so, they don't rush back and buy you again. Not what you had in mind. And delighted is the obvious thing. In addition, though, almost regardless of how satisfied you are, you may have some dissonance about your purchase. Cognitive dissonance is the feeling of anxiety that consumers experience when they've got to choose between an attractive set of alternatives. And what's the question always? Did I make the right choice? Should have I gotten the other one? Now, this varies a little bit in its strength depending on how permanent the decision is, how expensive it is, how many alternatives are out there, how attractive the other ones are. So there's some variation in how dissonant you might be. But have you ever had that feeling of, gee, did I buy the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Should I have gotten the other one? So we have to be a little cautious about that. Even though they may be satisfied, they may still feel uncomfortable about it. So this can occur regardless of your level of satisfaction. Marketers who are smart and aware of this and know that it happens in their product category can minimize dissonance through a variety of techniques. Now that they understand this might be part of consumer behavior, right? They can reassure consumers that they made the right choice. They can minimize the potential for product misuse through product literature and instructions, which leads to these silly things. Have you ever heard of or seen some? You open an iron, a new iron, and it says, do not iron clothes while still on body. Shh, we don't want you to be dissatisfied. There are things like that, right? We can offer mechanisms for lodging complaints, whether or not people actually bother. You know that if there's a problem, you have a way to complain. That reduces my distance. Oh, okay, there's somebody to talk to. And of course, when there are problems or issues, be responsive to them. When we used to shop in the old days in actual mall stores, anybody remember malls? There was a storefront called Coach. My daughter and my wife would go shopping at Coach. And after they bought their Coach bag, which of course are high quality, they're good, but they're expensive, right? You could have bought as I tell them often, you could buy a nice bag at Kohl's, but they would buy Coach. And then they would get a periodically handwritten note from the salesperson telling them what? Congratulations on your good taste in buying one of the finest purses in the world, to reduce any dissonance that they would have. H.H. Gregg knows that people who buy appliances often wonder are they getting the best possible deal, and they come up with an ad to reduce consumers' dissonance.
I used to feel anxious and confused about buying a major appliance. Turns out she suffered from FOBO. Until I found H.H. Gregg. Then my fear of not getting the best price, it just disappeared. That's what we do.
Get all the options you want during H.H. Gregg's Memorial Day sale. Up to 35% off store-wide, plus zero interest until 2019. And free delivery, all with our low price guarantee. H.H. Gregg. Gregg's got it.
Wow, I was worried about, am I getting a really good deal here or not? HX has me. They've locked it down, so I don't have to worry about that particular thing. I will be happier. Reducing distance of the consumer. Obviously, consumers don't go through the same amount of search and evaluation and angst and anxiety across all product categories. So what we say is that consumer involvement affects consumer decision making. So for example, we have routine problem solving. These would be products like grocery items. My example about toothpaste, right? There are a lot of toothpaste choices out there. You don't really go down and start doing research every time you go to buy toothpaste again. You don't look at each package and consider each option. It's a routine problem for you, right? So your consumer involvement in it is pretty low compared to other choices. How much time do you spend worrying about that loaf of bread you're going to buy? The time to make your decision, pretty short. I need toothpaste. I'm going to get Sensodyne. I'm done. The costs are pretty low. When it gets more expensive, you do spend more time thinking about it. The information search is mostly internal, unless something has changed. And the number of alternatives you consider typically are one. Which one? The one you bought last time. Second, limited problem solving. This is something which has a low to moderate cost. I think this microwave oven maybe costs, I forget what it costs, say $99 or $150 or something like that. It costs some money. So the consumer involvement is moderate. You want to make sure it fits right. It has the amperage you want, the voltage you want. It fits under your shelf. Your dishes will fit in it. The time is short to moderate. You might do a little shopping around. The cost low to moderate. You do mostly internal. You know you like a particular brand, but hey, what else is out there? Maybe I'll search around a little bit. And you consider a few alternatives before you click the Amazon button or buy it in the store. Then we have extended problem solving. The consumer involvement in this thing is high. The time to decide and make the purchase, pretty long. How about buying a sports car? Unlikely you're just going to go online and click, although I understand now more and more people buy their cars online, which for me is a little strange, but okay. The costs are usually relatively high. You want to make the right decision, so use both information that you already know and external things, consumer reports and consumer reviews and other sorts of things. And typically you begin by starting with many alternatives. What type of product or service is it for your customers? What sorts of search will they engage in to make their decision? What do they expect from you to provide them while they're searching? A little bit of information, masses of information in brochures and product demos and testimonials. You have to know that. All right, there are also a variety of consumer influences on consumers' decision making under the category of psychological influences. These are things in our model that we saw, like motivation, the energizing force that stimulates behavior to satisfy a need. Personality, a person's tendency to respond in a consistent way to situations. Perception, the process by which people select, organize, and interpret information. Learning, behaviors resulting from repeated experiences and from reasoning. Values, beliefs, and attitudes. And a person's lifestyle, the way that they choose to live their life, affects their life, but also affects their consumption. So here we see those psychological influences in our model: motives, lifestyle, personality, beliefs, attitudes, perception, all at work. And you see it all comes together to do what? Influence our decision process. All right, who's never seen Maslow's hierarchy before? Who has seen Maslow? Let's turn. Who has seen it? All right, a lot of us have seen it. Some of us haven't. So Maslow's hierarchy is a theory of motivation, consumer motivation, human motivation, consumer motivation. Most consumers are human. I digress a little bit from the main topic of marketing to talk about why you see this one so often. Prior to this, researchers, psychologists realized that there were different motives out there, but all they were able to do was group them together. So there'd be personal motives and social motives and belongingness and whatever. They just grouped them. They didn't organize them. Maslow's big insight was these things differ in terms of the forcefulness that they drive you in a hierarchical fashion. So if you are if you're having a great social relationship and suddenly I think something terrible happens, you lose your job, your family doesn't support you, and you're looking for food and shelter, maybe you aren't worried so much about your social relationship just then, right? These things drive up and down. Less drastic than that, you're well fed before class. We talked about this last time. You're well fed, everything's good. You're getting hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. And pretty soon, your motivation to the best marketing student you can be drags down by, he's going on and on, and I want to have dinner. Those motives can drag you up and down. So the base of these are physiological needs, the need for food and water and shelter and oxygen are the basic human needs. And marketers play off on this idea that they know that sometimes we're driven by these needs. So they show this, you know, this dish with the butter pouring down and the steam coming up and people enjoying it. I think they also mentioned the price, but that's not the key. That's not the focus. What are they trying to do? If you like lobster, oh, hungry. Whatever else I'm thinking of, I would like some lobster tonight, right? That was that idea of focused on the physiological needs of food, for example. At the next higher level is the idea of safety needs, freedom from harm, financial security. Okay, insurance is the idea of safety and security. Physical safety, financial safety, taking care of your family, doing what's right. So an insurance company like that might be focused on the idea of safety needs. Social needs?
A tear on a child's cheek. Tears of sadness. Tears of happiness. Tears of joy. Tears of love. Become a foster to adopt parent and be there to wipe a child's tear. Learn more about foster care and adoption with Summit County Children's Services by calling 330-379-1990.
An opportunity to share love with someone else. Clearly we're not talking about eating lobster here, right? We have a different level of motivation that we're appealing to with this love idea. Another level would be personal needs. These are needs for your personal status, prestige, respect.
It's been an industry leader for generations, born of a rich performance heritage, equipped with breakthrough safety features, and wrapped in a classic, timeless look. We believe great cars take a vision not everyone shares. Test drive the uncompromising E-Class today.
Great cars take a great vision like people like you have. Not everybody, people like you. You're special. High status, right? Status and prestige. And finally, and we say that this last one is not reached by all people all the time, and by some people it's never reached. These are self-actualization needs. This is self-fulfillment. This is being the best whatever you can possibly be. Okay? Hard to do if you're hungry, not safe, but marketers also play on this idea. Nothing?
I faced one of the toughest challenges of my life, right here. I couldn't swim. But I can still hear my drill instructor today.
Don't quit. If you quit now, you'll always quit in life. Go for it.
So I jumped in. Unsure, apprehensive, and scared out of my mind. But I came up. A Marine.
The few, the
This is not focused on your safety and security. The few, the proud, the Marines, be the best you can be. Join the Marines. So marketers understand these different motivations and play to them in entirely different ways. Personality is another factor that influences our life, how we live it, and of course our consumption patterns as well, our consumer behavior. So personality is a person's pattern of traits that influence their behaviors. How many of you guys know somebody in life, or maybe it's you, who is confident? They are a confident person, okay? And they're confident in what they do, in interactions, and maybe the sports they play, and the experiences they have, maybe in the purchases they make. Dependent, fearful, sexual in their everyday life. Well, these same traits, these personality traits, will influence them in their style of consumer decision making. Whenever I do this, I'm reminded of a cousin I have who was in showbiz, was out in LA, and she's bigger than, "Oh, darling, how you doing? Kiss, kiss, kiss." And she's always dressed in some elaborate, you know, glittery thing. It's her personality, and it manifests itself in terms of what she's wearing. You know, sort of people that are over the top like that, yeah? So it's their personality, and it's what they do. So what is your consumer's personality? There's a story about a company that was a manufacturer of analgesic products, pain relief. And they did a survey like the story was talking about in Marketing the News of their consumers. And they found that their consumers tended to be a little compulsive. Compulsive people really like order. You ever have anybody comes into your office, your home, your living area, and starts straightening up your magazines or straightening up your, what are you doing? Leave it alone. They're a little compulsive. So they like order, they trust authority. And so they change their advertisements to focus on order. When you want pain relief, take these three steps. And then they had the steps approved by a doctor. They like authority, they're ordered, and lo and behold, it appealed to those consumers with this somewhat compulsive personality. Sales went up with their product. So understanding your consumer's personality can influence how you reach them, how you get their message, how you provide value to them. Perception is a tricky topic for us in psychology and in consumer behavior. It's the process of getting information, receiving information from the external world, organizing it, and making sense out of it, giving meaning to it. Detected through one of our five senses. What are our five senses? What's one of our senses? Thank you. Sight. Sound. Smell. Touch. Taste. If that's five, that's good. Taste, touch. Okay. So there are five senses, and you're always encountering stuff through some of those senses. How do you make sense out of it? There's a lot of it there. And so this is important. The issue here is that not everyone gets the same meaning from the same stimuli. Important to know. In part through a process called selective perception, in part through selective exposure, in part through selective comprehension, in part through selective retention, people don't get the same meaning out of the identical stimuli that are out there. And this used to be a big topic of interest among students. It's become less so recently. We will touch on it as well. So let's talk about these things. So overall, selective perception is the process that we use to determine what, in quotes, to perceive. Due to selective perception, we may omit items from our environment. Anybody work in a grocery store? Do you know about how many items are on in a grocery store, how many individual SKUs there might be-ish? 100? 1,000?
I mean, I work at a smaller store. I don't work at, like, Walmart.
Okay, 10,000?
Walmart is probably, like, 10,000.
10,000?
We're probably, like, hundreds, maybe thousands.
How much?
Hundreds.
Hundreds, okay. So if I wanted to do shopping in your store, small store, but I couldn't selectively perceive what was on the shelf, I'd have to, presumably, look at each individual item, look at it, decide what it was, and decide if it was what I wanted, and then move to the next item, which might be the same item over here on the shelf. What's this? Oh, that's Crest toothpaste. What's this over here? Crest toothpaste. How long would it take someone to do their shopping in your store? a long time.
It'd take them a while. Yeah.
But, and forget a big grocery. But that's not what we do, of course, do we? We immediately go over things. We scan as much as we don't even see it in our mind. Boom, we're going for the thing we want. So the idea of omitting items or adding to what's in our environment or changing what we see or feel or hear influences what we perceive, what we believe to be true. How many of you guys know somebody who's dating somebody and you know that's not a good person for them to date? Look at how many hands are up. How's that possible? Aren't you observing the same behavior your friend is observing? What are they doing? They're omitting items of behavior. They're adding to what's going on. Or they're changing what they see. It occurs in real life all the time. It occurs in business. It occurs in marketing. Selective perception doesn't happen all at once. It occurs in various stages, including selective exposure, selective comprehension, selective retention. So let's do a little experiment. It probably won't work on my click. I'll probably have to go click again. Let's see if we can understand the differences between perception in men versus women. You can play at home too. And if you've already seen this, because by now it's been used by other people, don't tell your neighbor what the answer is. Don't let them know. Let's see what we determine from a naive audience who hasn't seen this yet, doesn't know what's going on. Okay? Let's see if my click here works or if I have to go do it a different way. Oh, yay. All right. Differences in male-female perception.
This is an awareness test. How many passes does the team in white make?
Go!
Okay. Ladies, how many passes?
13.
Who saw more than 13? Who saw less than 13? Gentlemen, how many passes?
12.
Who's 14? Wait, 13? Well, wait a minute. What's going on? How many people don't have any idea how many passes there were? Okay. Is that because you didn't pay attention or because whatever? So, let's give the answer.
The answer is 13.
Okay. How many people got 13? Terrific. All right. Who knows what I'm about to do next? You've already seen this somewhere else. Quite a few people. All right. Here we go.
But did you see the moonwalking bear?
Okay. How many people who don't know what's going on? If you already know there's a moonwalk. How many people saw the moonwalking bear that didn't know what was going on? How many people who didn't know what was going on, naive to what's going on, did not see the moonwalking bear? Okay, so I'm going to replay this for you. We aren't doing any magic. We aren't doing any tricks. It's exactly what you saw before. Let's look for a moonwalking bear.
Go!
All right, so how many people who didn't know what was going on, naive to it, who did not see the moonwalking bear before, saw it this time? How many people still did not see the moonwalking bear? One and a half? Okay. The moonwalking bear was there before. You see it now. Why didn't you see it before? It was there. Yeah. You were focused, I forced your attention, on where the ball was going. And human beings have limited capacity to process information. They selectively, under guidance in this case, focus on some things and ignore others. How were you able to see it the second time? Well, I wasn't focused on counting. I was able to focus on other things. If I had you focus on the moonwalking bear, you wouldn't be able to count what's going on. We have this limited capacity to go. The bear was there. We didn't see it. Now, this psychological thing is actually used in an ad. It's easy to miss something you're not looking for. look out for cyclists. They're making that point for this little advertisement. You miss the bear, don't miss people on bikes. Be careful. So it's not so much that there are male differences in perception, but rather that perception is not, we don't see things as they are. We skip stuff. This was fun stuff.
No.
This was fun stuff. How many of us see this dress as being blue and black? Look around you, because how many people see it as being gold and white? First time this happened, I said to my wife, same thing. What are you doing? Are you messing with me? Nope. She saw it the other way, right? It's there. Is it not there? Are we all seeing the same stimuli? How are we perceiving it differently?
You see, when it was asked me first time, I just went, a little bit of both.
Well,
and everyone hated me for it.
You're in between. All right, well, let's play with this other one, which, again, I did not think would work in the classroom because of a variety of reasons. Let's see if we can get this one going. Do you hear Yanny or do you hear Laurel? Let's see if it's still active. Can I get it to work? There we go. Yes? See what you hear? Web students, you play too.
Laurel.
All right, listen.
Laurel. Laurel.
Laurel. Laurel.
Wow. Laurel.
They're best Laurel. Maybe I don't. All right, so the point is, in that first play, how many people heard Yanny? Look around. How many people heard Laurel? What the heck? And again, the first time I heard this, it is clean and crisp and undeniably Laurel. There is no Yanny. And you're doing the same thing I do. What? What? People perceive identical stimuli in different ways. These are little tricks, but what if it's your advertisement that's out there? It's perfectly clear to you what people should be seeing, perceiving, taking away from it, and they're not. It's crazy. Selective exposure says that from the very variety of communications available, people choose to expose themselves to only some of these communications. If people choose not to expose themselves to the channel of media channel you use, they are never going to see it. So they tend to view ads that reaffirm their pre-existing ideas, their pre-existing attitudes, bolstering their image of what they of themselves and what they know. Clearly, in today's political society, we see this, right? There are people who are absolutely certain vaccines are bad for you, and they're not going to take it, and they're not going to give it to their kids. Yes? Do we know people like this? And there are absolutely people who know vaccines are good for you, they're protective, and they're giving it to their kids. Do we know people like that? How's that possible? Someone's misperceiving the world out there in this area of health and in the area of how many of you guys know people that are still smoking? This number drops off all the time. Holy tamales. Easily half the class. How many people believe smoking is bad for you? Well, wait a minute. What are we doing? So, marketers need to know that, marketers need to know that these perceptual blinds occur. People don't perceive the world without a little help. And so they find ways to break through them. If you were a nail biter and you saw that going down the street, might it get your attention as opposed to a brown paper bag or something from CVS? Sure, we're breaking through that perceptual barrier. Selective exposure. In addition, for example, people rarely read web pages word for word. Instead, they scan the page, picking out individual words and sentences. So you know that your consumer for your product is heavily involved. They want information. You carefully craft a web page with good information about the benefits of your products and the value it brings and the things that your competition doesn't do. It's all there on the page. And then people don't pay attention to it. In research how people read websites, it was found, and this is stunningly high to me, but it's research, that 79% of our test users, I'm sorry, it's not high enough. 79% of our test users always scanned any new page they came across. I'm surprised it's not higher. Only 16% read it word by word. I'm a little surprised that's that high. how often do you actually read all the words on a web page you come to? But I crafted that to give you information. You weren't paying attention to it. Selective comprehension involves taking the information that you did expose yourself to, that you did see, and making sense out of what it means. Oftentimes, the signals may be discrepant. They don't necessarily agree with each other. You hear something about a Mac computer and something about a PC computer. How are you making sense out of that? So it involves interpreting all this information so that it's consistent with beliefs and attitudes. Here we go. It was once reported in a study that 80% of non-smokers believe that there is a strong link between smoking and lung cancer. Needs to say where I'm going? Only 52% of heavy smokers accepted the link. Aunt Madge smoked 5 packs a day until she was 102. What are you worried about? It's all fine. Okay. All right, so we understand there are issues here with perception. So I'm going to tell you up front, I'm going to trick you. How many people think I can trick you? Because with a perceptual exercise? How many people think I can't? I'm telling you it's coming. How many people think I cannot trick you? Oh, good. Everybody believes me. Here we go. I'm going to show you 3 phrases. They're common phrases. I think most of you will know them. I'm going to put it up for long enough for you to read it, and then I'm going to take it away and ask you what you read, okay? It's a perceptual trick, I'm telling you. Here we go. Read the first one. You can anybody not be able to see that? Can you see it in the back? Okay. Read the second one. Read the third one. All right. Wait, don't yell out. How many people know what I'm asking you about in terms of the perceptual trick? Okay, so how people don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, somebody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, what did you see? Can you yell out one of the things you saw? Okay, but what were the words? What was the saying? And we have the phrase, yeah.
Once in a lifetime.
How many people saw once in a lifetime? Wait a second, how many people didn't see once in a lifetime? Okay, what was another one? Paris in the spring. How many people saw Paris in the spring? Whoa. How many people didn't see Paris in the spring? What's going on here? And whatever the third one. Anybody know the third one? A bird in the hand. How many people saw a bird in the hand? How many people didn't see bird in the hand? Huh. There's something amiss here, right? What could it be? Now I'm going to give you more time. Because I'm telling you, I'm messing with you. Here we go. Spend a little time. Dwell on it. Ask yourself, what is he doing with the stimuli that could possibly be tricky? It's not that hard. What could he be doing that's messing with me? This should be long enough for you to see it. Many people won't. How many people who did not see it before now see it? How many people still don't have any idea what I'm talking about? Okay. Somebody who just found out what's going on, tell me, what did you realize? What did you find? Yeah.
There's like
two of the same words. So let's read the first one. Paris in the spring. Once in, oh, I hear a bunch of, oh, there you go. Once in a lifetime. Bird in the hand. The phrases are familiar enough. It's what we expect to see because we're familiar with it. And even though I told you I was going to mess with you, you didn't get it. What if this were some sort of thing that was important for me as a marketer to make sure you knew, you saw, you understood, you perceived that there were two repetitive phrases, words there? What could I do with the stimulus to make sure that you saw it, knew it, realized it, other than telling you? Yeah?
Change the colors.
Maybe I could put one in blue and one in yellow. I bet you'd notice that. Maybe I could bold one. Maybe I can italicize one and underline the other one. Would you see it then? I think so. What's my point? Marketers put out information. It's all there. You can see it. Put out information all the time. They say to themselves, it's right on the page. People must be able to understand it. And they don't. And then they don't do the research to understand. Consumers aren't picking up what's obvious to them. Once you do the research and you understand that consumers aren't perceiving the stimuli as you intend it to be, what can you do? Make the adjustment. Change the color. Change the font. Okay? But you're clueless if you don't understand a little bit about perception. People don't perceive things the same way, even when they're there. Okay? One last time, because now you're on to me, right? So now you know what's going on. I'm going to mess with you with these numbers. Okay, you can't like it, but you can raise your hand. Raise your hand if you know what the joke is. Oh, you got, how many people don't know what the joke is? Okay, somebody who does know, tell them what the perception is. Yell it out. At the top, can you find the mistake?
I was just counting the numbers.
I know you were. That's the point. You were just counting the numbers. Your attention was drawn to the processing that you thought was appropriate for the situation. Other people got it. Well, yeah, they weren't counting the numbers, though. All right? What is it with your ad that consumers aren't getting? Why? What can you do to fix it? Selective retention. Even if you're lucky enough to get people to pay attention to your ad, your commercial, your packaging, and they got it right, they understand it properly, do they remember when they go to buy something at the store? Do they retain it? People remember more accurately messages that are favorable to their self-image than are those that are unfavorable. People remember the good things and forget the bad. Selective retention reinforces your self-image. But whatever it is in your case, marketers need to find ways to help consumers to retain their message. You had a great ad for Oral-B toothbrush. Consumers liked it. They understood it. And then they forget about it when they get to the store. Rats! So what do we do? Maybe that image, that color scheme is in our ad. Maybe we don't see jingles so much anymore. Maybe it's a little jingle that plays, or a little tune that plays, and you play it in the car, and you play it plays in the store, and boom, there it is in the end cap. You've helped them to retain what they perceived. They want the product. Now you've helped them to remember it. So what can you do to help consumers retain the information? Anybody hear of, again, this seemed to be a bigger topic a while ago, subliminal perception. Is that something you've heard about ever? No. All right, so I'll tell the story because it's in the slides and people used to care. Subliminal perception was the idea that marketers and other nasty people could influence you with stimuli that was beneath your conscious perception. This goes back to what later on was proven to be a false story, but it went back to a thing where in a movie theater, supposedly, they blinked very quickly on the screen, drink Coke, buy popcorn, very quickly. And supposedly, sales of popcorn and Coke went up. Later on, this was proven to be false, but it got in the minds of people that marketers are out there messing with you. They're giving you stimuli that you can't really see or hear that are influencing your decision processes. Now, let me say in all honesty, psych experiments can use such stimuli that are either below your threshold for hearing or below your threshold for sight to influence sometimes dream states or sometimes your mood a little bit. But it's not getting out there to buy a product. It's just not a thing. And the idea of subliminal would be that it has to be below your threshold. How many of you guys have heard of these ringtones that high school students can hear that the teachers can't hear because of the frequency of it, right? If it's low enough for you to not hear it, there's no way it's going to influence me. I haven't a chance of hearing the thing or seeing the thing, right? How are you going to play with that subliminal? And by the way, somebody is going to hear it. They're going to hear it just like we heard Yanni or what was the other one?
Laurel
or Yanni. Somebody's going to hear it. It just can't work. So we're going to set aside subliminal. By the way, the ad industry is hardly a place where we can keep a secret. If it were a real thing, it would get out. People would know about it, yeah? So it's just not a thing. But some writers of pop culture, pop business, have confused subliminal perception with what I'll call hidden stimuli, hidden perception, okay? So he calls it the secret sales pitch. It's borrowed from your book. If you haven't seen the chapter, it's not going to be obvious. And he says, look, we hide things in our ads to cause consumers to buy products. And there's the old idea, liquor ice cubes supposedly would have a skull and crossbones, like in the little ice cube shadows. Why? Because people who drink have a death wish. Or have an image of a naked woman in the ice cube, right? In the shadows of the... What? But okay, let's set that aside. Here we go with one that You can clearly see it uses sex appeal, right? How many people see the sex appeal here? How many people have no idea what I'm talking about? His claim is that, how many people see it now? Who still doesn't see it, by the way? Okay, everybody sees it? All right, now watch this. I'm going to make it disappear. I'm going to make it subliminal. Boom, it's gone. How many people can't see it anymore? It's not there. Well, that's not subliminal. You could call it hidden, I guess. Now, why that would make you want to buy the book, I'm not too sure. But that's sort of the logic of this hidden stuff, yeah? How many people see the other secret hidden message? One. Okay, here it comes. Boom. Can you see it now? Wait, I'm going to make it disappear. Boom, it's gone. You can't see it anymore? Once you see these things, you can't unsee them. For me, it's all nonsense. I don't believe that marketers make any use of this secret stuff, hidden stuff, to try to influence you. It's just not a thing I believe exists as a marketing practice. All right, so consumers perceive marketing stimuli selectively because each individual is unique in the combination of his or her needs, attitudes, experiences, and personal characteristics. Why did a whole bunch of people see the walking bear on the first show? Because they had seen it before. Their experience is different than your experience. They perceive it differently. And so identical advertisements, packages, products may very well be perceived differently by different consumers. Might that be important for you to know? They don't get it the way you put it out. By the way, over here, when we test in marketing concepts, we know people don't get it the way you put it out. Otherwise, everybody would get it all right. They perceive it differently. They selectively retain it differently. So these psychological influences are important. Perception is important. Perceived risk, another psychological influence. This is the idea of the riskiness of the purchase. Perceived risk, yeah? So for example, you just aren't as concerned about making the wrong choice in that candy bar as you are with that car, that house, that custom-made suit. Financial risk can drive how much interest, how involvement you have, right? Physical risk of the product. What happens if you buy a smoke detector that doesn't? That doesn't seem like it's a good idea. I wouldn't like that. Performance risk. Do we have anybody doing extreme sports, X-sports? Yeah, what do you do?
Yeah, a little bit, like
free running and parkour. Do you have particular equipment, and I guess in this case maybe apparel, shoes or something that you use for that makes it more?
Yeah, for the most part I have shoes with like good grip on them.
Good grip. So if I said I can get you a really nice pair of these smooth bottom, no ripple, no grip shoes, really cheap, would you be interested?
No.
No, why not? Because you're going to kill me. So how much risk is there in the failure of the product to perform, right? I can get you a really cheap pair of brakes for your shoes, way below manufacturer's selling price. How would you like those? No, I want brakes that work. Psychosocial risk. Have you ever bought something, a hairstyle, a shirt, a blouse, a pair of pants, a tie, it doesn't matter? You're really happy until you go talk to somebody and they go, what did you do? And suddenly you're not happy anymore. This is the idea of the risk involved in that. Did you think that getting an orange mohawk was right for you, how people would react? I tell you a true story again. My wife, for a long time, when I was a little younger, truly wanted me to get my ear pierced. That's what I said. What are you talking about? I know I look young and hip to y'all, but for my colleagues in the marketing department, how would they react if I walked in with a diamond stud in my ear? Just not my persona, right? Although it would have made my wife happy at the time, the psychosocial risk was too big for me. Wasn't going to happen. So you have to understand your consumers' perceptions of risk and figure out how you're going to address those in your message. or in your product. You're not ever going to buy a pair of no-grip smooth shoes, but maybe I can change my product to better appeal to you, to bring better value given the performance risk. This was, who knows if it'll work for me, this is an old ad from Chemistry showing how they deal with a little bit of the financial.
I vow to never wear a flannel nightgown.
Can you just make that, I vow to never wear a nightgown? I vow to never be a classic rock DJ.
I promise to embrace your human beatbox.
Isn't it time you found great chemistry with someone? At chemistry.com, we vow to help you find it. Take our personality test and get your first 5 chemistry-inspired matches free. Visit chemistry.com today.
So it's $39.99 or it's $80.97. That seems like a lot of money. Is it really worth it? We'll give you your first 3 matches free. Oh, you've reduced the idea of the financial risk for me. We'll see if it's worth it. Learning's a good story. I like to tell it. It's got several pieces to it, but I feel like I won't give its full description. So it's another of these psychological factors that's really important to us in marketing to understand, in business to understand, but we're going to let it slide. Today's Thursday, right? So we have another mini test coming up. Yay! Mini test 4. We'll end here, and we'll be off to rock and roll. Have a good weekend. See you next Tuesday.